F1, number 9A.
Now, prophet means the disappearance of material sense before the conscious facts of spiritual truth. So we begin to see that in this 4,000-year period, in the prophetic age, the stress lies on consciousness, where we are conscious of spiritual truth. This is very different than perhaps only saying the truth or learning the truth, learning our synonyms, thinking over what is mind, what is not mind, what is spirit, what is not spirit. But when it comes to the prophetic age, it is a consciousness of these facts. It's not just stating facts, not just saying facts, not just learning facts, but the great point is now here to become conscious of these facts, so that the facts of God can talk to my consciousness, to the Lord, to my Lord, to my consciousness, and so establish the coincidence between principle and idea. To establish that coincidence between principle and idea is again not just a saying, just to say, well, naturally principle and idea is one. These are truths, but how are we going to be conscious of them so that we are consciously living and moving and being in the realm of these spiritual truths? To show how the method, how this is being established, the prophets show the Christ translation, because through the Christ translation, God comes to me and abides with me. The office of the Christ translation is to become conscious of the ever flow of God to man, of the ever flow of principle to idea. And so these prophets begin to culture us and to recruit us into a method through which finally we can say, like Daniel, I can interpret everything just as God would interpret them. I can know things just as the Lord can know them. That's the high spot of prophecy. That's the 16th standpoint of the prophets. So what we are witnessing this week is really that method through which we become a prophet, where we consciously know the Lord. Hosea starts right away with the first standpoint within those 16 standpoints and shows that this Daniel standpoint at the end of the matrix can never be attained, that we can never be conscious of that standpoint except we start with Hosea, where we begin to learn that God sows, and God sows, and God sows his idea. All the way through. It's mind that sows its idea, it's spirit that sows its idea, it's soul that sows its idea, it's principle constantly sowing its idea. that life sows its idea and principle sows its idea. Life and truth and love sow its idea. If we begin to correct, therefore, at this standpoint, that belief within us that we are walking around and living in a world where we are constantly torn to and fro by evil and good, where we are, so to say, uncertain about our footsteps and about our future and about politics and about our income and about this and about that, this is showing that we have not yet touched the first standpoint of the prophetic age. Because the first standpoint of the prophetic age tells us that the only sowing, that the only atmosphere that is constantly operating, the only influence, the only impulsion that is ever operating is God. So, in order to get out of that ebb and flow of human consciousness, Hosea tells us that big law, that which says, now you become a scientist, and you become a scientist which works always from the standpoint of God. And so he gives that wonderful law which shows that we should be conscious of what? Of which spiritual truth? Hosea's consciousness of spiritual truth is that law which says, all right, everything that is ever going on is mind flooding the universe and me with the ideas of mind. That mind is constantly at work, constantly, everywhere, at every point, at every time, constantly flooding and flooding the universe with power and with action. That mind is constantly coming to me and to you and to everybody as the divine law, as the establishment of the divine law, as the enforcement of the divine law, as the revelation of the divine law. I just see that all that there is going on is mind coming to you and to me and to the universe, constantly flooding me with intelligence, with inspiration, with wisdom, with apprehension and comprehension, with deep insight into being, and that is the only intelligence that there is ever flowing and ever going on, and it's coming to you and to me. Well, you can take any of these ideas of mine. Then you can go to spirit and begin to realize I have to become conscious as a prophet of the spiritual facts of Hosea. Hosea who tells God is spirit and therefore God constantly comes to me and to you and to the universe and to every situation and to every problem and to everything as the true order, ordering everything, ordering gently, ordering lovingly, ordering quietly, ordering beautifully and happily everything. That spirit is constantly coming to me and to you and to the universe and to everything as that power of unfoldment that comes and unfolds only good in you and in me and in every position, in every problem, in every case. You can go on to the spirit and see that spirit is fruit, is substance, and therefore, because it has a Christ, it constantly comes to me and to you and floods the whole universe with that sense of true substance, with the evaluation of true substance, with the everlasting substance, with the apprehension of true substance, which invades ourselves with the sense of true fruits and giving us only the fruits that are good and that are real and that are everlasting. And against that, everything breaks into pieces. Everything that goes against that breaks into pieces. So we can go on to sow and see we have to be conscious in order to be the prophet conscious of that fact that soul is constantly coming to me and to you and to the universe as the true identification of everything, as the true naming of everything, as the true apprehension which cannot disidentify anything, which just always identifies everything and everywhere and in every situation truly, divinely, spiritually. And against that, all other naming and identification just cannot survive. Or you can see in soul, that soul, we can become consciously conscious that soul is ever translating itself to me and to you and to the universe, and that's the only thing that is ever going on, that God does translate himself as the calm of soul, as the balm of soul, as the joy of soul, as the rejoicing of soul, as the freedom of soul, as the happiness of soul, and as the balance of soul, and as the capacity of soul. And that just invades the whole world and the whole universe. And against that, any other sense of it cannot survive, cannot stand, breaks itself down. See, and so you can go on to principle. I just don't want to go on, it takes too much time to do it. But I just give you the method, you see. I don't want to inspire you in the first place. Naturally, I like to inspire you too, but I want to train you to see that you take home a law which you, in your quiet hours, can use and use and use because you know your synonyms. The moment you know your synonyms, I only have now to introduce to you the 16 standpoints of the prophets, and then you can write the prophets yourself. Saying a bit a lot, but more or less you can. But what you can do is to write them in the nowadays language and in the nowadays idiom and adapt it to the need of today. Now, have you seen what I have been doing? That's what I was asking you to do yesterday, to try to just do this. You see, I must point out that Hosea doesn't go very far in his treatment. Hosea goes really only as far that it just fills first consciousness with the amplitude and abundance of God's ability to translate himself as his idea. And then, as a sign mark, and everything that is against that cannot stand. That's just a little sign mark, you see. Everything that does not breaks down at that fact. Doesn't go any further than that. But that is the first thing we have to do. Because how are we ever going to handle any evil if not from the throne of grace, if not from the consciousness of fullness first? First we must fill our consciousness with this Christ fact. That's quite clear, that we can't handle error or evil with an empty consciousness. We just have first to fill that consciousness, but not to fill that consciousness by saying, see, Hosea wouldn't say this, if I sit down and say, now, what is God? Well, God is the creator, and God is law, and God is power, and God is action, and God is intelligence, and God is wisdom. You see, that's not Hosea. Can you see that? That's only stating the true nature of mind. Hosea wants to do something more. The moment we come to the prophetic age, we remember, it is always God says, I do this and this and this. It's always the Lord says, I'm going to do this and this and this. It's never saying to us, well now you see, you must see God as this idea or that idea. Doesn't ever say that. It always says, I am God, the Lord says, I am God, and I have an idea. And now the Christ in it says, Therefore, I express my ideas constantly, universally, irresistibly, absolutely, against every so-called resistance. That's the Christ in it. Is that clear now? Well, see, that's Hosea. So, the logic of it is quite evident that the first prophet first must state the intention of this monopotent God who is good. First, God says, I am good, and I have the power to express good. And that is my, that was the one, you see, and that is my intention. That's the A in the chart. See, when we think about the chart as the 1A, 1A, you see, Hosea says, well, all power, all operation is with God. And he is the only power, because everything that does not start with God has not the power to succeed, has not the power to survive. It breaks down, has no power. So the A in it says, yes, this monopotency of God's good has one intention, and the intention is defined in Hosea as saying has one intention, to bring out God's idea and not to tolerate evil to succeed. That's Hosea. That's our law which we have been doing just right now. I think it must be very difficult for you to get what I want to say. I always feel I don't express myself clear enough. But I think that's just perhaps now in the nature, it just takes a little time to adjust thought to it, you see. And little by little it becomes clearer and clearer. But if it isn't clear, it has one big advantage. Namely, it makes us realize that we haven't quite fathomed the meaning of the matrix. That we have been perhaps speaking and discussing the matrix with each other, but that we really haven't fathomed the matrix deeply, or we wouldn't have much difficulty in seeing these laws. So, that was Hosea, that law. And it is a good thing from time to time just to sit down when everyone has a quiet moment and just fill consciousness with that translating power of the Christ. See, as long as we stay perhaps only in the world and where we just say what mind is and define mind through its idea of mind, somehow in our thinking or consciousness, that God is somewhere. Somewhere. But the moment we go to the standpoint of the Christ matrix and say, but this mind expresses these ideas, which we have seen it has. We have seen mind has ideas. But now the Christ says, but mind expresses these ideas and expresses them constantly. And they are constantly coming to me. Only good can come to me. Only good does come from God to me. Christ is defined as the divine message from God to man. That's Hosea. See, that definition of the Christ, to a certain extent, is the definition of the Christ in Hosea. You know how Mrs. Eddy defines the Christ in many, many ways, not in one way. Because alone in the Christ matrix you have 16 definitions of the Christ according to the standpoint. So that's why Mrs. Eddy didn't give just one definition. You know, when I, at the beginning, perhaps you had the same thing, at the beginning of the study of Christian Science, I always said to myself, but why doesn't Mrs. Eddy say in one definition what is the Christ? And I would know what the Christ is. But I read hundreds of sentences in her writings, and perhaps she gives, out of these hundreds, and perhaps 20, 30 definitions of the Christ. And they vary so much from each other. And then somebody who is trained in scientific thinking says, well, that's not the definition. You can't define in one place the Christ this way and the other place that way. But today, naturally, we see how true, how logical it is that you can't define the Christ just in one way, because the Christ can only be defined through all its offices. And alone the Christ matrix has 16 offices of the Christ. You see, 16 standpoints of the Christ. And therefore, alone for the matrix, we would need 16 definitions. Quite apart that if we come to the Christianity matrix, there again the Christ appears about 7 times in the matrix. There again you need different definitions of the Christ. And so one begins to realize how true Mrs. Eddy's writings are, and how she would have limited the subject enormously if she would have only given one definition of the Christ. So, little by little, you know, through the Bible, we come nearer to the textbook, and through the textbook, we come nearer to the Bible. Somehow we begin to see the scientific meaning and structure and depth and exactness of the textbook clearer and clearer, even through the prophets. Now, that was, again, one of the side remarks, which I shouldn't do when I am speaking about Hosea and come to Joel. But they are always quite interesting because there are problems that creep up in many students' minds. So, when we are at Hosea and begin to see that he shows those two laws, so to say, which are really one law, namely that mind manifests itself constantly as its ideas, and second, that against that standpoint nothing can succeed. He gives those two parallels, so to say, through every of the 7 subjects, until only at the last moment, in the last verse, he shows that there is only really one way of the Lord, that the just walk in it, and that the unjust break down in it, in the same law. So he shows at the end, he indicates, I would say, at the end, he indicates really that there is just one law and one way of the Lord. So Joel comes along and must explain that. He must explain how we should translate the two into the one. That's Joel's office now. That Joel's office now takes the last verse of Hosea and explains that translation of the two into the one. And so we come to the, in our chart, to the 1B, you see, where again we will find in Hosea that there is only one God, and that he is the only God. That it looks as if this God has a dual sense, an army of evil and an army of good. And so in the chart, the B, you see the B, enforces now the translation of this two-ness into oneness. It says now you can't go on always with the law of Hosea, because if as long as we stop with the law of Hosea, lingering in our consciousness is still that God is all and that evil cannot succeed, but it's still there. It's still there. Just say, well, it can't succeed. So we can't leave it at that faint sense of duality. We can never leave evil as evil, evil as error. We cannot even leave evil as nothing. Even that is a mistake. We can't leave evil at that we say, well, it breaks down in itself. We have to go further to Joel and say every belief of an evil has to be compensated into good. Only then, really, we make out of two one. We can't just say to anything, well, that's error. Finished. I turn my back on it. It can't succeed anyway. We shouldn't leave it at that. Sometimes, well, we just do it and say, well, oh, that's there, I can't be bothered about it, and turn our back on it, and the next thing we know is that it stabs us in the back. We have to go and be a Joel and translate it. And Joel comes now and translates that army, that so-called army of evil, and shows that it isn't an army of evil, that it is the Lord's army. But just looked at it from the standpoint of drunkenness, of having had too much wine, too much new wine, he says. See, so in his symbolism, what he wants to show is that Joel comes and says, don't stop always with Hosea. Go on and see that which seems to be evil, though you have said that it will break down by itself, that it will fall back on itself, don't leave it at that. Translate it. Translate evil back into good. Or we could say, compensate that evil with good. I like that word, compensation, also. Though, perhaps, scientifically, it is better to say to translate it back to good, just as the second translation shows it, that it shows how the first degree must be translated until only the third degree is apparent. But that is, therefore, the purpose, you see, of Joel. He comes to us and handles evil in a new phase. It handles that evil in us which says, you must translate every concept of evil you have into good. You can't just leave it there where you say evil is nothing. Translate it until only good is reigning in Zion. That's how Joel ends. The Lord reigns in Zion. And there was no more any army of locusts and cankerworms and palmer worms and so on in Zion. In Zion, huh? You mean what I... So, Joel, you see, gives now a new law. And he shows that this belief that there could be an evil must be translated into a conscious understanding that there is only good reigning. He shows that through a sevenfold sequence, the sevenfold sequence which he shows, yes, the belief says that there is an army of animal magnetism and it's so big that you can't even number it. But the conscious facts of spiritual truth, the prophet in us says, the divine mind wakes us up of that drunkenness, of that new wine, and makes us realize that this army is a delusion, that we have been dreaming about, that it is just a dream stuff. Then in the second subject we have seen how Joel comes and says, yes, I know the belief in you tells you that this army of evil can take away all your substance, can make you poor, can rob you of everything. But spirit is always there at work and comes and makes something in you to mourn and to lament and to cry unto the Lord. Something, spirit is always coming to me and to you. Now, as that ability to bring us to the point of mourning over material substance, to see that and makes us to long to wean ourselves away from a reliance on matter, from valuing material things, and making us realize that the spiritual substance can never be taken away from us. Then in the third subject, he shows that animal magnetism tells us, that the belief of evil tells us and says, you know, against evil there is no healing. evil at the long run is always the victor. Death will always be the victor. Sickness and an incurable disease will always be the victor. That's what animal magnetism says until it, as it is shown, creeps into our whole human consciousness.